Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, if you've listened to us for any length of time, you know that a lot of the guests I have on are people who have a dream and pursue it against all odds, often, and succeed. And sometimes there are people who have a lot of dreams and pursue them all in parallel. My guest today is one such person. Her name is Angela Sun. She's actually the host of Yahoo Sports Minute, which you may see often if you're on the internet, particularly if you're on Yahoo News. And in addition to that, she's, you know, a general sportscaster and sports journalist. She's ESPN's first Asian-American female correspondent, as well as on the Tennis Channel. She has a show she hosts called The Court Report, and there she's, on that channel, the first Asian-American anchor. So she's really, you know, kind of a groundbreaker, somebody who doesn't let barriers stand in her way. She's a contributing writer for travel website Watermelon.com and is also an actress and has been on some movies. So kind of at a young age, she's climbing the celebrity ladder and doing pretty well at it and going really fast. But that's not at all the topic of our show today. But first I'll say hello, Angela. How are you?
Hi, how are you, Court?
Appreciate you being on with us. Angela has made a movie on something that drew her interest because she loves the outdoors, she loves nature, and she's a diver and a surfer, and made a movie called Plastic Paradise, the Plastic Paradise movie. And I'm going to let her tell us about it. It involves something that goes on in the Pacific. It's actually a documentary about something called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which sounds pretty dramatic. So tell us about the garbage patch in the movie, Angela.
Well, the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is a term coined a couple years back about basically the ocean current systems move in a circular motion. There's a lot of different ocean currents that move opposing the wind and gravitational forces. And there are these patches or these gyres, as you will call them, sort of a slow motion whirlpool that spin around and keep our waters moving. And as we have found, there's a lot of debris and a lot of it's plastic that gets caught up in these gyres. And most of it is from the land. And, you know, whether from runoff or from dumping or just things getting out to sea, it ends up in the middle of these patches. Because if you think about it, if a whirlpool goes around and around in a circle, the middle part doesn't move. It spins in a circular motion, but it collects and congregates in the middle, and it's a doldrum. There's no current in the middle. And so if it's like a toilet that won't flush, but it spins and spins, the toilet goes down because of gravity, the water, but it doesn't pull it down anywhere because it's just the middle of the ocean. So it just sits there. And that concentration, the high concentration of plastic in those areas is specifically in the North Pacific is what this is named after, the Great Pacific Garbage Patch.
Well, the Pacific is a big ocean, as we all know. So how big is the garbage patch?
Well, there's estimates that it's, you know, twice the size of Texas to the size of the entire continental U.S. There's different estimates. It's really hard to be completely accurate. And I think by the time that we do the research to make it, have an accurate, like, data sample, it's too late because our oceans are already completely littered and trashed with plastic and marine debris. Mainly, I say plastic because that's the stuff that doesn't biodegrade. It's durable. It's made to last. It has infiltrated every, you know, facet of modern society, and so it doesn't go away. And so just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. It's somewhere else. So if the Earth is covered by 75% or so water or more than that, and then you can't see it, but then the plastic's not on land, it's got to be somewhere else, you know, so it's in the ocean mostly. There is other debris, but when you say the term debris and use that loosely, it can mean anything from palm fronds to coconut shells, you know. And those things like will actually biodegrade and go back into the earth as natural things should. But the unnatural synthetic materials that we create, that's what that stays.
So we all see landfills, and we know that they're filled with all kinds of junk, including whole lots of plastic, and they sit there like a big kind of artificial hill. But when you say garbage patch in the ocean, you kind of think of a big pile of junk in this sort of still place in the middle of the gyre that you described, Angela. Is it really a heap of solid plastic and other trash, or is it smaller particles, or what's it comprised of out there?
Well, the Pacific Ocean is the largest body of water on our planet, so it's massive. I mean, it's pretty hard to, I mean, by the time, if it was a giant heap of plastic, like a floating island that just kind of floats around, we're really, really too late. We're seeing the signs of just the proliferation of plastics in the marine environment already so far. And so I think taking heed to that is already a big deal. But the misconception of the garbage patch is that it is this giant floating island. I happen to get to a place, Midway Atoll, which collects all of this debris because of the way the currents work. It washes up on these shores. But a lot of places, there's no pieces of land, you know, where it can collect. But the place that I went to is literally in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and it collects about 20 tons of plastic a year.
Yep.
It's tiny. So it's not like necessarily there's a floating garbage island, but this is an island that receives a lot of the garbage.
Well, I think you're right that polymers, which are plastics, chemically speaking, don't degrade naturally into something natural. They remain plastics, but they do break down. I think the sun breaks them down, and wind and wave action would break them down into smaller and smaller particles, but that doesn't make them any less dangerous for the environment. They're still there, and in fact, they spread out more when they do that, I suppose. If it's a kid's scooter that floats, it's going to wash up on land somewhere, and at least it'll be there intact. But if it breaks down into a million pieces, then you got a million pieces of plastic. So,
right.
So it's like, I was going to ask you how much of it ends up on land. So you went to Midway Atoll, which is a little island in the middle of the North Pacific, I guess north of Hawaii or whatever, and that's part of what's in your movie, which is called Plastic Paradise. And it's actually, everybody can go to see the trailer of it. It's plasticparadisemovie.com, all one word.
You can definitely check it out there at plasticparadisemovie.com. We have a trailer that we just released for World Oceans Day. It was in conjunction with the Yahoo News article that I had just written. It was some exclusive video for Yahoo News. And we are looking for a release date. And so if you'd like to follow us on Facebook or Twitter, at Plastic PDICE, definitely follow us and so we can give you updates on where the screenings will be and when it will be released and keep you updated. There's also been, we've got a lot of buzz and people are really excited about helping out. And that's what I'd like people to take away from this, is that it is as much anyone's film as it is something that I created. So I want everyone to feel a sense of ownership of it, and anyone can get involved by even just sharing, even just reposting it or retweeting it and getting the message out there is awareness enough. And I think we need to start with awareness of this problem to be able to make a change, because it's hard to make social changes, but I think, you know, in numbers we can. And so I love that Margaret Mead quote that, I'm probably going to massacre it, but it's, never doubt that a small group of committed citizens can change the world, because it's the only thing that ever has. It always takes a small group of people. And so people don't have to donate monetarily, although if they do, it is tax deductible. So I'm just happy for any of the help, and it's very fun to have these enthusiastic emails coming in and replies and stuff like that.
Well, I would just say you're in your 20s and super busy, and you found time to do this movie, and you're self-financing it. I mean, it's a pretty impressive documentary, and so you could use some help financially as well as just in distributing and disseminating the movie, because the whole purpose of your doing it is to raise awareness of this problem that's thousands of miles out there in the middle of the Pacific, and we never see, right? So there are plenty of problems on land, but this is a big, huge, worldwide, invisible problem that's way out there. And you're trying to raise awareness of it. And so any help that people can give by going to plasticparadisemovie.com and donating would be very useful, right? So,
yeah, thanks.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with sports journalist and now filmmaker Angela Sun about her movie, plasticparadisemovie.com, or Plastic Paradise. She's exploring the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is a huge phenomenon out there in the water. When you went to Midway Atoll, Angela, which is in that area, what did you find there? I mean, did you find the whole place was covered with plastic, and did you find little pieces, and was it all from every part of the Pacific Rim, or was there stuff from outside the Pacific Basin that had found its way through the currents up there? I mean, what kind of struck your interest in the junk you found there?
Oh, gosh, we found everything there. We found a giant buoy from Taiwan that was bigger than me. We found computer monitors. We found kid toys. We found actually a message in a bottle, which was very unique. And one of the volunteers was beachcombing with me, and he had said he found a message in a bottle, and he showed it to me, and it was from a kid in Long Beach, California, and it was just shows how things go full circle. I live in Southern California, so I went to go find that person, and you know, a small thing like a message in a bottle that was dated in May of 1999 to have found that over 10 years later was just such an amazing feat, and to find that over 5,000 miles away, it really shows that what you throw away from the past may come back and find you in one way, shape, or form. We found everything, like things, there's debris, there's plastic pieces from, I mean, there's giant cans and whatnot from Ireland, from Russia, from Japan, a lot of Asia, a lot of cigarette lighters. And it's not, well, what we saw, it's only 4 months accumulation of plastic, but because it is a National Marine Monument, the government goes out there and cleans this up now, and so they actually move all the trash off the island. But if they actually kept it there for the year, it's about 20 tons of plastic that wash up on those shores. And now, with the tsunami debris, it's, I'm sure it's grown a lot.
I was going to ask you if the Japanese tsunami added a huge amount to the junk that's floating around in the garbage patch out there. Could you see any of that, a sign of that material?
I went before the tsunami happened, so I don't know. But I do know that it has washed up on Midway, and it has hit Midway because just reaching out to sources who have been on the island since then, and especially because tsunami debris already, there was a dock that washed up in Oregon, there was a soccer ball, a motorcycle up in, I believe it was Canada and Alaska. So it's definitely going to hit the west coast of the U.S. and hit Midway first.
So with all this plastic out there in the water, some of it tiny, some of it bigger, some of it things that can trap animals and so on, what's the effect of it on sea life? Did you, I mean, in general, from what you know, and then also maybe from what you might have seen in your, in the filming of your documentary, did you see any impacts on marine life of this junk?
Yeah, we saw the impact on the albatross, and basically every albatross chick, which they're these fascinating creatures, they in themselves are just amazing animals. They spend most of their time at sea. They only come to land to nest and to breed. They are monogamous. They go to one spot. 70% of the Laysan albatross live on Midway of the whole entire ocean. They can circumnavigate the world. I believe it's seven times. I don't want to be quoted on that. I'm not sure, but they're just these fascinating like statistics about them. As I was doing research, they sleep while they're flying.
Oh,
they
right?
literally are. They are the barometer of our oceans. They see what's out on the surface of the ocean. They have bellies full of plastic, and if their parents are bringing them back, you know, plastic lighters to feed them, that's saying something about what's out there in the ocean, which no ships have been to, or you know, that we don't go explore that often because these birds are, they live out there. I mean, this is their home. So yeah, I did. I mean, we saw that in that. We saw that in the birds, and I didn't cut open a fish, but I know that there's plastic in fish.
Sure.
And we've talked to lots of researchers who have encountered that. There is plastic on, we saw netting. There's a lot of fishing nets, which are, a lot of it's made out of nylon, which is plastic materials, that's synthetic materials. Lots of discarded fishing nets. They're called ghost nets. So, yeah, there's, you definitely see the effects of plastic in the environment, but not even just that. Like we come home and we see the effects of it on us.
So it's kind of like pervasive, basically. Everything that lives there is living in an environment that's got plastic kind of strewn throughout it, and it's impossible for living things to avoid it, I suppose. You know, I was wondering if a lot of it's floating in the you know, on the surface and then kind of in the shallow parts of the water column, you know, like a lot of plastics do float, but there are a lot of things that are, I was surprised to hear you say that a computer monitor had washed up. I would have thought that would sunk. So I was wondering if there's like the whole ocean bottom is strewn with debris, plastic and otherwise, that we don't see because it's so deep, you know. Did the scientists and researchers you've talked with say that there's a problem of more stuff on the bottom than there is on the top?
There is, actually. There's a lot that is littered on the ocean floor. I believe one of the scientists that we interviewed from Conservation International took down a submersible down to the sea floor in Japan, and this was more than 10 years ago, and they said that the plastic was strewn all over the ocean floor. If you think about these things like Carnival, New Year's, all these celebrations that people have all around the world, like they dance in the ocean and they have fun, but then, you know, things float out to sea. There's a lot of trash. And every year, I believe in Brazil, after Carnival, they have people go out there. I mean, there's like nonprofit organizations who go and pick up all this trash that ends up on the floor and on the seafloor, at least the shallow parts of, you know,
close to the coast.
And they get, you know, hundreds of pounds of plastic. And so that's just nearby. But because international waters, I mean, when you're in deep water, we have barely even touched the bottom of the sea. Like, we barely know, we don't know much information about the bottom of the sea, let alone, like, go down there. We know more about the moon, you know? So we're still learning, but I think people would be shocked at just what's happening if they could see it. I mean, it's in deep, deep in the water column. It's not just shallow.
Yeah. I'm a native Floridian, and I lived, for 20-plus years right near the Atlantic coast in east central Florida. And on the beach there, you would always find plastic stuff washed up, some of it fresh off the cruise ships that had just gone, you know, sailing offshore the night before, and some of it all faded and years old, and sometimes with a pull date on it from 10 years ago or whatever, but, you know, or other countries. So, you know, even there was, you know, lots of plastic always washing up, you know, even 20 years ago. So, I mean, is there a similar garbage collection in the middle of the Atlantic? And what about the rest of the world's oceans, like the Indian Ocean and so on? Is this all over the world?
Yeah, I mean, the ocean current systems work all over the world. And so there's actually five gyres, the North Pacific, South Pacific, North Atlantic, South Atlantic, and the Indian Ocean, that been around in these gyres or patches or whatnot. But there's plastic in all of those oceans. It is everywhere. You can't escape it, especially if there's not much regulation in the U.S. at all, but there's definitely not regulation in third world and developing countries. So, at least we have cleanup efforts, but you can't, if you keep cleaning it up, it's almost futile unless you start social change and stop things where they start, which is through legislation, through awareness, through, you know, consumer change. I think it's everything. And people refute back and forth, whose fault is it? And they point fingers, but you can't just point it at a legislator. You can't just point it at a producer or a consumer. I think it takes, you know, it'll take a lot of effort for all of us to make this change.
You know, I'm old enough that I can remember just barely when I was a little kid, before there were littering laws, right? Before it was against the law to litter, and before there were any signs on the highway saying no littering, $250 fine or whatever. And the roads, you wouldn't believe it if you saw it today. I mean, if you saw it like it was then and you saw it today, you'd be like shocked, because there was trash all over the roads by the side of the road. It was just littered with paper and stuff. But there wasn't that much plastic being produced compared to today. There wasn't that much trash being produced. There weren't that many people. So I'm wondering, like, you know, with the explosion in the population growth around the world, you know, we've got, obviously, littering is against the law in the U.S. You don't do it. You see the roads are clean. But I'll bet that the oceans in many areas look like the side of the road used to look like a long time ago, you know, in the mid-50s or whatever. And, I you mentioned the developing world, you know, where there's no real concern like there is here that much about the state of the environment and so on, and people are just trying to desperately make a living and that sort of thing. So I'm wondering, do you know if the rate of growth of the accumulation of trash or the output or production of trash into the oceans, do you know if the rate of growth is increasing? Is it getting worse all the time as far as the amount going in per year, or is it just the same huge amount year after year, or is it getting worse? Do you know?
Well, I mean, if you think about the Industrial Revolution, and if you think about the wars we've been through, of course it's grown. I mean, when Scripps Institute did their study, and that was a small data sample, that is, you know, they saw that from the 1970s, that plastics have grown 100-fold since then in their data samples that they found. Captain Moore from the Algalita organization, he's also a big pioneer, and he's the one who founded the patch in 1997, and he sailed through it. When I swore, he said it was, you know, roughly estimated 6 times as much plastic as plankton. That number has grown as well, that ratio. So, yeah, it's definitely grown for sure, and it'll continue to grow as long as we're continuing to process it and output and sell it and buy it. Yeah. It's going to continue to grow.
I mean, in our cities here, we have recycling, which 20 years ago was pretty much unheard of, you know, but now in many places it's mandatory, or at least, you know, you're kind of shamed into recycling, and that's a good thing. But,
well, recycling doesn't necessarily work.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not necessarily plastic. There's so many different types of plastic. There's at least 8 different types of plastics, which are the main types.
Okay.
And the only ones that you can recycle are PET
mm-hmm.
and HDPE. Those are the two, number one and number two, on the bottom of your bottles that may be recycled. But if you look at things that are like plant plastics, biodegradable plastics, corn plastic, they actually don't have that much machinery to even recycle them.
Mm.
And so people think recycling is sort of pacifying the problem.
Mm, okay.
Because it's saying, still consume, still drink the bottled water, still, you know, be disposable in your ways. And it's saying it on the back end. You know, like, oh, just recycle it. But a virgin, like, plastic needs to be made out of virgin plastic for it to be strong. I mean, for example, the water bottle. Even if it is 30% recycled materials, you cannot have 100% recycled plastic water bottle. So if you throw your water bottle away, it's not going to turn back into a water bottle. It'll be downcycled and sent to places like India and China to become things like plastic decking. So it is a little bit of an effort, and I think it's an easy way for people to think that, you know, they can just continue the way that they are. But I think the biggest thing that we're trying to promote is social change and awareness and the fact that you should actually reduce and reuse.
Okay. So that's the main thing.
Using a reusable water bottle, using a reusable bag. I say bags and bottles because they're the most used items that are... And it's not that plastic is bad. I don't think plastic is bad. Plastic is great. And, you know, we touch it every day. We use it every day. We wear it every day. But it's the single-use plastics that are just unnecessary. Like, it's not necessary to get everything in a plastic bag when you walk out of the grocery store. It's unnecessary to pick up a plastic water bottle when you can carry your own. You know, it's just those are changes that make it inconvenient for people.
Yeah. So those are a couple of big things, like using, you know, canvas bags rather than the plastic bags at the grocery store. And most grocery store chains now will encourage you to do that, and a lot of people do it. And then, like you say, you know, it used to be that there were not water bottles, and, you know, 25 years ago you'd buy a Coke or something, but now everybody thinks that water in a bottle is healthy, whereas it actually is not. It's just a reverse osmosis processed city water in a plastic bottle that's going to be thrown in a landfill. But if you take your own bottle and refill it, that helps. But are there any other little things like that that are little, but that if, you know, several hundred million people do them, are huge? Are there any other things like little tips like that that you can suggest, Angela?
Yeah, I think those are the two big main ones on single-use disposable plastics. I think just trying to shop locally, support your local farmers market, support your local market. Don't buy things in plastic packaging if possible.
Yeah, okay.
You know, one of the really easy things to do is when you're going to go get your coffee, ask for it with no lid. I have a reusable coffee lid. That's great. And they'll be like, oh, I have actually asked, and they say, oh, but it's mandatory that I have to give it to you with the lid. I'm like, but I'm standing right here. So there's, I think there's certain things that people just need to take, like, yeah, just be more aware of, or bring your own coffee cup. Just keep a mug in your car. I have a spork thing. It's like a plastic fork slash knife slash spoon, reusable thing that you just keep in your purse. Straws are 33% of beach litter. You don't really need a straw, and they do have glass straws or metal straws or stainless steel. These are things that people don't think about because it's too disposable. Why would I pick up, why would I carry this stuff around if I could just get it and throw it away, you know, a disposable straw or whatnot? But
yeah.
You see the effects of this in the environment. Even if, I guess, if you're a smoker, I'm not, but I've seen the plastic cigarette lighters
right.
all over the place. Like, get something reusable, you know, carry a nice one. There's different little things that people just aren't even aware, because it's just ingrained in us that we just throw it away.
So I think what you're saying really is it's a state of mind, Angela, that, like, basically don't do just one or two things and feel all virtuous about it, but basically use common sense and always think when you're using plastic items, is this something I can not use? I can do something different, or I can reuse this, or I can just basically not use this. Like you mentioned, the lid on a coffee cup, you know, most people wouldn't think of that. But so little things like that, if millions of people do them every day, it adds up to a huge, huge impact. And so that's the kind of thing that you're doing with your movie Plastic Paradise. And I mean, you know, you're a super busy person and you found the time and resources to make that film to draw attention to this problem. But everybody, you know, isn't going to make a film, but they can have their own impact in their own little kind of lifestyle and their own choices they make and in their family and in their house. So maybe that's really the big message of your movie. And I hope we've helped to convey it a little bit through this show today. Angela Sun, thank you so much for being on with us on American Variety. And thanks to everyone for listening. I'll tell you what, you can go again to www.plasticparadisemovie.com and see the trailer there and find out what Angela's doing. And it's a, you know, great little movie. And if you feel inspired, you can donate, I guess, by PayPal there maybe.
Yep. Or you could just, you know, email and get involved and, you know, work for me a street team to kind of spread the message and awareness when we have our screenings and release dates and events that you can be a part of. So that'll all be coming up as well. So anything is helpful, so it'd be great.
They can also go to Angela's own website, angelasun.com, spelled just like it sounds. And of course, she's on Facebook and Twitter, so you can communicate with her and you can watch for her every day on Yahoo Sports Minute. Thanks again for being on with us, Angela. And thanks to you all for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.